session number 24901, Reel 4.
Sergeant Brabs, Reel 4. You were saying that it was necessary to go to Syria. How did you get to Syria?
How did we get to Syria? Syria was ruled by the Vichy French, as we know, who were allies of the Germans since the French surrender. So it was decided we would take Syria and prevent it entering the Germans. We set off at the beginning of June together as part of a force of British, Free French and Australian troops. The Leicesters were in the British Brigade, which took the coastal route. So we must have gone up the coast. We crossed the canal at El Kantara and drove up through Egypt and across the Sinai Desert into Palestine. The heat at that time of the day was terrific, but we had several stops. We were through Jericho, which is about 1,000 feet below sea level and is the lowest place in the eastern hemisphere, equal to Death Valley in America in the western hemisphere. Oh, that's free information. I remember stopping for a while at Tiberias and having a swim in the lake, and the pebbles on the edges being so hot we could hardly stand on them. Even our steel helmets were intolerably hot. We met up with the Vichy French forces on the plains of Damascus, and the battle began. These ranged about Damascus for about 2 weeks, and we were made worse by the heat, sandstorms, lack of water. On more than one occasion, we were unable to get any water out of the day until the water carts could get through in the evening. Eventually, with Damascus surrounded, the Vichy French surrendered in order to save further loss and abandon the city. A few days before the surrender, I was struck down with sandfly fever and had to be evacuated to hospital in Jerusalem.
On that movement to Syria, did you get involved in any fighting against the Vichy French?
Yes, we were all, they were with the Germans and
Do you remember any details about that fighting?
Only that, as I say, that it was the heat and the difficulty in getting supplies and getting water and all that, you know, it was really, really terrible. I can't think of anything else.
Do you remember, you know, whether the French were fighting from properly dug positions or whether it was open?
No, I don't really know, because, as I say, they were very north of us and they were going to come through there. That at least they were hoping to, which is why we had got down below and got the blocks on them. There were some Australians as well. But they were never any good at anything.
You were saying the Australians were never any good at anything. Why was that?
Well, they were useless, were the Australians. Everything they touched, they made a mess of it. Good Lord. They would fight. You know, you'd find that you were being fired on, which by who you thought was the enemy, and it were the Australians that were firing at you. I had one or two lucky escapes, I'll tell you that. They were irresponsible. In fact, when the ones that were earlier in the war, the Australians that were coming from Australia to Europe, to reinforce the battle there. And when they got to South Africa, they were welcomed ashore, as we had been later on. And they made such they caused such trouble that South Africa said they would never lay set foot on their ground again. They were rolling barrels of beer down ropes, and they were heffing it and blinding it and carrying on. They were all drunk, and that's what they thought of them. And as far as I know, they've never been able to land there since.
What happened to you when you got the sandfly fever then? What was that like?
You get a very high temperature, and it's just like you have to keep in bed for a few days, and you have to give you medicine to treat it. And I was in. At first, I didn't think I wanted to go into hospital, because I went to the first aid post. You see, I was walking about virtually with my overcoat on, and it was God knows how many degrees. I was shivering, and so I went to the first aid, and the doctor put me down to sleep. And then he came next morning, and he said, "Well, how are you?" I said, "I've had a good night's sleep. I feel nice. Can I go back and join my, you know, section?" "Oh," I said, "you can't, no. You're going to have to be evacuated to Jerusalem, and you're going to be evacuated by rail." So I said, "Oh." There's another bloke. "What funny is this?" Because there was another bloke who was in my section, and he must have been in before me with something. And the doctor said to him, "And how are you this morning?" "Oh," he said, "I feel terrible. Oh," he said, "I, you know, never slept all night." "Oh," he says, "I think we'll have you up and go back to your go back to your company and tell them you're all right now." I thought, "Well, here's me trying to get away, you know, saying he isn't feeling all right and this, that, the other." He was pulling it on, you know. I had about 6 days there, and then went to a place on the coast. It's a very favourite place with the Jewish people now. I can't remember just what they called it, and I had 6 days there. To recuperate, and then they started doing a little bit of training and this, that, the other, and every Saturday, I think it was, that they used to do this run, and if you could do this run, it was a four-sided run, and if you could do that, you were better, and you could go back to your unit, see, which most people were wanting to agree about. You don't like being cut off, because you never know where you might find yourself. And that was that.
When you were in Palestine, did you get any idea there of the political atmosphere at that time?
Well, there was an undercurrent going on all the time, yes. And there was a special force, wasn't there? Palestine Police. I remember thinking myself when I was there, it'd be a cushy job, I wouldn't mind that. But it wasn't. And yes, they were at one another's throats a bit, but nothing like today's violence, because they couldn't have done it, they hadn't the stuff to do it with. But they were a bit, at loggerheads.
What happened when you got better then? Where did you go after that?
I went back to my unit, and they were in, let me see, can't remember.
Were they still in Syria, or had they gone back by that stage?
I can't remember the place it was going to. After 2 weeks, I returned to the battalion, who were acting as army occupation in Syria and had taken over the French Foreign Legion barracks at Hamar. I remember that, yes. I was glad to be back with my mates and get the latest gen. Hamar is an ancient biblical town, and the barracks were on a hill overlooking the town. One of its attractions was a wheel, water wheel, hundreds of years old, which brought up the town's water from an underground spring and fed it into a system of aqueducts, can't read my own writing, which supplied the town. The water wheel was made of wood and about 40 feet high and could be heard creaking all night. We slept in the barracks on iron beds which the French had left, and I remember we had to paint the bed legs every night to stop the creepy crawlers from climbing up. We all had 3 days leave in Damascus, the oldest and most conquered city in the world. It was amazing to see the fountains playing in the streets after our experience with the water in the desert. The streets were full of stalls with craftsmen selling their wares. There were jewellers, coppersmiths, gold and silversmiths, carpets, so on. And I got a few things for my mother and sister and that to take home, which was, you know, they were really great.
How did you get on with the Syrians? Were they all...
The Syrians? We didn't really come in contact with them. They sort of kept to themselves and we kept to ourselves.
Did you see anything of the French?
The French? The French Foreign Legion was somewhere. I don't think so at that time. No. When I got back to the... we all had 3 days leave in Damascus, the oldest... how do you want to... whatever the price, he asked, you would offer him a half. We all know that, don't we? This could cause him to raise his hands in horror and tell you if he sold it at that price, his wife and many children would be left starving. You were a rich man and couldn't want this to happen. But in view of the fact that you had driven the wicked French out of Damascus and that he liked you, he would split the difference with you. You then stuck to your original offer, saying you couldn't afford it anyway, anymore. He would shrug his shoulders and you would start to walk away. 9 times out of 10 he would call you back and accept your offer, or let you get a little further down the street and send one of his helpers to bring you back. If you accepted his first price and just handed the money over, he would think you were soft in the head.
What happened after Syria then? Did you go to Syria. Egypt?
Yes, I think we would have done. I don't know where I came home from.
You
went to where?
Ceylon.
Yes. We had 10 months on Ceylon. What happened was that the Dutch East Indies was being attacked by it would be the Germans and
the Japs.
The what?
Japanese.
The Japs, yes, it was. And the thing was that if to be, they got the islands, they would be able to attack India. And we were on a ship going to these islands, and we didn't know any of this. We didn't know any of this. The beginning of 1942 found us on the move again. This time in another direction. At Port Suez, we embarked for the Dutch newly built liner, the New Amsterdam. This had been taken into service when Holland fell to the Germans. It really was the last word in luxury. Meal times were like this, and you had no idea where we were heading, and there was much speculation. We had sailed down the Red Sea, through the Gulf of Aden, and were crossing the Indian Ocean, and the Dutch East Indies seemed a good bet. We had been at sea for quite a few days when the ship made a drastic change of course, and we learned that we had now heading for Ceylon. It was revealed later that we had been going to Java, but the Japanese had taken the island while we were on board ship. Luckily for us, we had not been on it at the actual time. We continued our voyage for a day or two before arriving back at the harbour in Colombo, Ceylon's capital and main port. Across the harbour was a huge banner which said, "Welcome to Ceylon, home of good tea." After disembarking, we finally reached our destination, which was about 4 miles from Kandy to Peradeniya, where we established a camp in tents. And that's where we were for another 10 months.
What were you actually doing on Ceylon?
Well, we weren't doing anything, really. It was quite a rest. But they had been scared of them coming up, the Japs getting the Dutch East Indies and coming up then and getting India, because had there been no defence at Ceylon, they would have got by into India.
Were you working on any defences in Ceylon while you were there, or anything like that?
There was a huge peacetime naval base at where was it?
Colombo.
Yes, that's right. You nearly went there, didn't you?
Yeah,
Colombo. Yes, it was a magnificent naval base, and also there was quite a lot of troops on the island then, and so they thought it were quite secure. Brought his headquarters down to there. I can't remember, but I'll tell you.
You started your training though for the Chindits, didn't it?
Training?
That's where you did your training for the Chindits in Ceylon,
isn't it? Yeah. Then it was found that there was a whole brigade doing nothing in Ceylon. So General Wingate said, "Well, I'll whip them back here." And so that's how we came to be with the Chindits.
What What did you learn when you were doing your jungle training?
The first thing I think was quietness. You had to move quietly. You come crashing through the jungle. That was it. You had to have stores with you that you wouldn't be able to get. You'd have to make sure that you either knew where there was a water supply or you had to carry your own. The things like that that you had to do, and you have to know who were the natives of the island and all that sort of thing, which was good in Ceylon. It was a really lovely place. I could have stopped there, I tell you. But no, we had to go. But we were there best part of a year, I would think. Where did we go to from there? It was General Wingate was looking for troops for his next manoeuvre, and so we became Chindits and we had to do training. Oh, golly, it's a bit rough. You carried about 28 pounds on your back and this, that and the other, and you're going through all the jungle and this, that, you know, and we had this training and training and training, and then we set off one morning to capture somewhere. I forget where it was.
How do you move quietly in jungle? What is the trick of doing that?
There are places where it perhaps it's not possible, but you can, you know, gather, you go around the trees and not come crashing down when you're swinging on branches and that sort of thing. You couldn't do it altogether wholly, wholly, if there were people about, but it was a thing you had to accept and recognise if you wanted not to be caught. You had to be quite prepared to and stop and then go on if you could hear nothing, you see, things like that. If you knew there was troops in the area, you didn't give them a chance. And you could, you know, it was, you could either get to where you were going or you didn't get to where you were going. But as I say, on Ceylon, it was we used to do that, you know, kinds of training and that. It was really a great place to be on.
What happened when you went on the Chindit expedition then? Tell me about that.
I've read it so many times I can't tell you.
Started your long walk, didn't you?
Yeah, you are.
Started your long walk.
Yes, we started our long walk. Is it on there?
Ramaputcha there, George.
Oh, what?
Ramaputcha,
yeah. Just can it?
No.
I wanted the one before this one.
No, 27.
This is from the 16th Brigade from Lido. Yes. From Lido, that's when you started going down the... Yes, this was Wingate and his troops. the main task of the brigade was to capture the town of Indore. On the 5th of April, the 16th Brigade set out from Lido, in the Brahmaputra Valley to march to Indore, a distance of 360 miles, through the jungle. Each man had to carry on his back a pack weighing 60 pounds, plus a rifle or Bren gun, and ammunition. In our packs would be everything we needed, including 5 days' rations. When we got going, there would be supplies. We would be supplied by airdrops, usually at night time. All the rest of the equipment, such as the reserve ammunition, medical supplies, radio communication, heavy machine guns and mortars, were all carried by mules. And each platoon had a mule to carry a flamethrower. The mules had all been devoiced, an operation to prevent them making any noise whatsoever at night time. Where does that go to then? Mm-hmm. It carried on till.
That's 27 and
all. Yes, we continued to march.
Let's pass the march, yes, hold yes, that's yes. Okay.
Where's my pencil? The Leicesters led the way. The going was very tough. In some places, we climbed heights of over 5,000 feet and had to get the mules and their loads safely across. We marched for an hour and then had 15 minutes rest, and each day's march had to end, if possible, near to a small river or stream, in order to refill with water, our water bottles, and make tea. In each platoon, we had 4 sections, each of which consisted of a corporal, a lance corporal, and 8 privates. As a corporal myself, I was in command of a section. Each section would organise its own tea-making. 2 or 3 would collect dry bamboo and make a fire. 2 would get the water in the chuggles. One man would get big something tin which he would have tied to the top of his pack to make the tea in. 2 more would be seeking a nice long stick to put through a wire handle to see if they could make it for the can. We continued our march for another 3 weeks over the Pat Kai Mountains until we came to the River Chindwin, our first obstacle. Wingate sent us a signal. Well done, Leicesters. Hannibal eclipsed. The brigadier had chosen a loop in the river as the best place to cross to give some protection from being spotted by Japanese spies. Then the RAF dropped inflatable dinghies with outboard motors on, and we started to cross. It's all good stuff, isn't it? But that's not getting you what you want, is it?
When you were moving through the jungle with your section, how would you be moving? You'd be moving
in single file. Single file. Yeah.
What sort of distance would you have between one man and the next?
About a man's distance. You'd be able to have an easy reach if you wanted him.
You know.
Yes, a good arm's length. Mm. Yes.
How did you know which way to go? Did you move by compass or were you following?
Well, the